Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. It's Jason Leisure. We are in London, and the Bears have just emerged victorious. What is 35-16 against a really, really bad Jaguars team. Jason, the first quarter didn't go great, including the Bears' long snapper got hurt. They couldn't score the way they usually can't score. And then the next three quarters were just party time for not only the Bears, but everybody in the city.
Everything looked right for them, Patrick, at that point. And no more so than for Caleb Williams, I would say, who followed two really good games. He played probably his best game to date against the Rams and then topped that against the Panthers. And then I don't know that he topped it today, but it was more of the same in a good way.
23 for 29 for 226 yards. Four touchdowns, came about a half inch away from a fifth. He had one interception on a little bit of, I don't want to say trickery, but a deep ball on third and short. Boy, he was just under control the whole time, and you know the fourth quarter didn't really matter, which is so rare for Chicago Bears offense.
We'll come back to that interception because it is worth talking about it. And as a whole, Caleb Williams, after the first two drives where they went three and out, really sharp.
Yep.
And again, you have to weigh the fact that the Jaguars are one of the worst defenses in the NFL, just like the Rams and the Panthers the last 2 weeks. But there are things from his performance that translate. Mm-hmm. The quickness with which he's recognizing coverages, the comfort he has in the no huddle, the accuracy of his passes. Right there, Pat, you can look back to week one. Mm-hmm. And even, honestly, week two with the overthrows. And week three, when he threw for 363 yards, the throwing accuracy is so much sharper now than what it was the first 3 weeks, and that's what you expected to see from him. There are parts of these performances that he will be able to do even against better opponents. Now, I don't know that his offensive line will hold up quite that well against better opponents, and that's going to make things difficult. But where he sits right now, it cannot be taken for granted that the Bears took care of business in a soft part of their schedule, because that is not something they always do. And that is not something you can always assume a rookie quarterback will do.
3 weeks ago, we were sitting here saying, why the hell can't they beat bad teams like the Colts? And then they beat three in a row. You know, the Rams was the first easy one I could remember. Then the Panthers was even easier. And this one, Jason, by the start of the fourth quarter, it was pretty clear the Bears were going to win, and they were going to win by a lot. Caleb Williams is getting better. And I think that is the best thing Bears fans could hope to hear going into a bye week. He's healthy. He is making the right decisions most of the time. Obviously, he's a rookie, and there are going to be mistakes, and it's not always, you know, we talked at the beginning of the year, it's going to be a roller coaster. It's going to be up and down and up and down. Boy, the last month, it hasn't been. I mean, it's been a pretty steady climb, and that's just, it's exciting for today, but it's really exciting for next month, next year, the year after that.
It's very exciting for the Bears right now, Pat. They're 4-2. They've won three games in a row, first time in 4 years. They're 4-2, but in a good way. We've seen them be 4-2 in a bad way. Yeah. They're 4-2, and with a quarterback on his way up, that's pretty good. Caleb Williams has clearly been on his way up the last 3 weeks, and when you take that progress and you kind of attach it to those first three games, you can kind of now see a line for him, an upward slope of things getting better. And you alluded to this. Let's get to the interception right now, because it is not going to be without mistakes. There's a big difference between Caleb Williams regressing and Caleb Williams screwing some things up, but still kind of headed the right way, because he's a rookie quarterback. And Matt Eberflus said today something about the interception. I'm paraphrasing now. He said something to the effect of, we're going to have to live with some of that. Mm-hmm. That some of that's going to be the case. I was really interested to hear his explanation on the interception, Caleb Williams, at the time. When we saw it happen, there were a couple different ways you could diagnose that error, and I was curious to hear what he said about it, because that would give you some insight into how concerned you should be about a mistake like this. Caleb Williams' version of events is that the play worked, he saw it, and it's just an underthrown ball. It's a throw that he didn't put enough power into. He threw it at a higher angle than he should have, so it didn't. So it kind of hung a little bit. And Matt Eberflus said something to the same effect, that ball needs to be thrown to where it's in the back of the end zone, DJ Moore, or incomplete. Mm-hmm. That is more, I can stomach that better than I can stomach he didn't see the safety for example, which I don't think was the case, or he saw DJ Moore's route too late. He saw him popping open too late, which that could still be part of what happened, even though that was not the way Caleb described it. But interestingly, after that play, the Bears defense gets a three and out, and that's where you see some of this blueprint where they were not counting on him coming in being perfect. They were counting on him being good at some point this season and probably needing to work his way there. But the rest of the roster, because this rebuild is in year three, was pretty built out. And when you can throw an interception like that, that could have tanked the game. Mm-hmm. That could have been pivotal. That was a chance to go up 14-3, I believe, at the time. Yeah. And had that gone back the other way and you're down 10-7 at the end of that exchange, that's a killer in some games. Instead, defense goes down. It's a pretty quick three and out, I think about a minute and a half or so. You got the ball back. And from there, Caleb Williams is on fire. He said after the game, Patrick, that that interception infuriated him. He had some choice words for himself on the sideline. And he said he was really, to quote him, very pissed off at himself after that. And he came out with a little something extra from there. And it shows.
Right.
I mean, what were the possessions after that? The possessions after that were
four touchdowns, missed field goal. They never punted. After that, they didn't. They punted twice in the first quarter. Scott Daly, the long snapper, got hurt. And we'll get to who his replacement was here in a minute. But, yeah, the Bears were successful offensively the rest of the way, and with no exception. I mean, even the missed field goal was not on them. The Jaguars are really bad, but the Bears did more than just do what was necessary. They stomped them.
Well, you look back to last year, they played the Carolina Panthers, who ended up being the worst team in the league. They played them at home at Soldier Field. And granted, Tyson Bagent was quarterback that day, but I think they won 16-7.
Yep.
I mean, very unimpressively.
Mm-hmm.
They have taken care of bad teams and thus shown you that they have graduated out of that tier
right
in the NFL. That's a step. That's not the whole ball game, but that is a step toward where they want to be. Cole Kmet responsible for practically all their points today.
Right.
Cole Kmet, Pat, 5 catches, 70 yards, 2 touchdowns, and
he's the long snapper when in case of emergency. Scott Daly went down. He has a knee injury. You can presume probably the worst.
They ruled out Scott Daly fast, and they never rule people out fast.
Yeah, and the Bears are going to have a week to bring in a new long snapper. But Cole Kmet, you know, came in off the bench. You saw him practice while Daly was down or shortly after he limped off the field. And he came in and he snapped the ball on 5 touchdowns or 5 extra points. He did so on a field goal that didn't work out, but he did just fine. And, you know, one of the ways you can help Cole Kmet is you can not punt. And I think that is maybe the biggest reason for his success as a long snapper was that he had the short snaps to the holder, not the long snaps to the punter. Also, I mean, they were high, but they got there. And they weren't really fast enough, and you could see everybody's timing was a little screwy. But Cairo Santos made the kicks.
The extra points.
Like, that's about as good as you could hope for. I mean, we were sitting there, Jason, at the end of the first quarter. The Bears were down a long snapper. They were losing. And the Jaguars seemed to be moving the ball at will. And, boy, it just turned real fast.
Do you want the background on Cole Kmet,
long snapper? Would love it.
So, Cole Kmet was asked, how did he ever get this job in the first place, and how much does he practice it? How did he find out that he was doing this today in the moment? All interesting questions. We'll start at the start, which is they found out that he was doing this in high school.
Okay.
He was practicing long snapping with his brother in high school, and he was practicing this, Pat, with an eye on trying to make the NFL someday and thinking, hey, if you're competing for the last spot on a roster,
right,
and you can also long snap, maybe that helps you make a team.
Mm-hmm.
Cole Kmet ends up being a star at Notre Dame and a second-round pick and gets a $50 million contract. That's not his world.
Right.
But I love the work ethic.
Yeah.
And he said these teams, when they draft you, they find out everything.
Right.
So they knew when they drafted him that he had done that in high school. And Cole Kmet almost seemed like he wished they didn't know that. And he actually practices this once a week. Cole Kmet practices long snapping every Thursday. And then he praise that he doesn't have to do it in a game. Because I think even he knows he's just because he's the best out of the other 52 at it doesn't mean he's good at it. Yeah, and then here's the story from the sideline that I love that Cole Kmet told. I don't know if you were in the room when he told us. I love this. He says, Richard Hightower walks up to me and says, hey, Scott's hurt. And Cole's like, Tyler Scott? Yeah. Like, why are you telling me this? What would I?
He didn't know the snapper's name.
He said, how does this? He's thinking, like, how does that affect me if Tyler Scott got hurt? And Richard Hightower goes, no, Scott Daly, you have to long snap. And Cole Kmet goes, oh, bleep.
This is one of those things where rightly so, we salute him for doing well. But boy, if you're him, this is just a lose-lose situation. A one snap goes over the punter's head, and the game turns, and it doesn't matter that you're just the backup who they threw in there.
You're forever Cole Kmet who blew the game in London.
Yeah, they don't stamp emergency snapper over the highlight when they show it on ESPN. Yeah. It's to his credit. You know, he had those two touchdown catches, the first two of the game, actually, I believe. And, boy, he has been... since the start of last season when they gave him that new contract, he has been everything they could have hoped for. And it's a credit to him. It's a credit to an offense that is finding ways to get everybody involved. You know, Jason, you look at their box score right now. Kmet had 5 catches. Keenan Allen had 5 catches. DeAndre Swift had 4. DJ Moore had 4. Roma Dunze had 2. Roshan Johnson had 2. Boy, that's pretty good distribution. That's what you want. And as long as your receivers don't mutiny because they have to share the ball, that's ideal.
A lot of guys played well. Yeah, not just Caleb and Cole Kmet. Keenan Allen, I think this was – I mean, he had the 2 touchdowns, but I think also you just saw what Keenan Allen can do for an offense, and you say it all the time, Pat.
On third down, throw the ball to Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen is a walking, talking third down conversion who is always open. Matt Eberflus talked about this at the podium today. I'd asked him, set aside the statistics for Keenan Allen, just the play and the effect on your passing game today. Is that what you were picturing Keenan Allen doing for this offense? And he said, yeah, he's always open. He said, I've spent years when he was on the Chargers and Eberflus was defensive coordinator for the Colts, I spent years trying to throw things at throw double teams and whatever, and it doesn't matter. He's always open. Keenan Allen, you know, asked about some of that today. Just says, that's what I do. And it is.
Let me walk you through a series, the first series of the third quarter in which the Bears have the ball because T.J. Edwards forces a fumble on the first play of the third quarter. By the way, how'd you like to be a Jaguars fan? You received to start the second half and it takes one play and you're right back where you started.
The Colts did that with the Bears that game too, threw an interception right out of the gate.
Second time that's happened in, 4 weeks. Third and four. Caleb Williams completes a pass. Let me back up. Third and 9, looks at Keenan Allen for an 11-yard gain. 3 plays later, third and 4, finds Allen for 3.5 yards. He stretches at the goal line, but there's a penalty. It comes back, so now it's third and 9. You know what he does? Throws to Keenan Allen for a touchdown. And then there is the celebration, which I enjoyed very much.
They talked through several ideas. This was the main one that they liked. DeAndre Swift came up with it. I was calling it at the afternoon tea celebration. I think that is probably more accurate, but I don't need to quibble with DeAndre Swift and Keenan Allen over this. They seem to be calling it the tea party celebration. Either way, we get the idea. So they collect in the end zone and have this. They were talking about it on that drive. Hey, whoever scores a touchdown, we're doing the tea party celebration. And Caleb Williams' role in this? A beef eater. Just one of the guards. He's just standing there to guard them while they have their tea.
I think they're conflating a couple of different British things. No?
That's okay. None of them are British. You know, they don't have to know all of it.
I wonder, if you live here, I'm sure the first time something like that happened 11 years ago when they started playing this game.
I'll answer your question right now. Yes. Yes, they are totally annoyed by this.
Do you find it condescending?
No, they don't like this. Right.
Keenan Allen, and I talked to him earlier this week, Jason, and I said, DJ's had his big game. And he pointed out that, Swift had a big game, Rome had a big game, Kmet had a big game. He kind of hadn't, or he really hadn't. I believe his season high was 33 receiving yards, something like that. And let me tell you, if you didn't watch the game, he was more impactful than the box score is going to tell you. I mean, we can look at, 5 catches, for 41 yards and two touchdowns. It was a pretty good line. But, man, it was, those five catches were really, really important.
And Keenan Allen brings a presence to this team that nobody else does. Keenan Allen, when we talk to him, you can feel it. You know you're talking to someone who has accomplished excellence. Mm-hmm. Someone who – this is not like Mercedes Lewis where he's been around for a long time. Keenan Allen has been around for a long time and been great.
Right.
He has been top of his craft for over a decade. There is an element of seriousness and respect that he brings to the Bears that I don't think they get anywhere else. I mean, they have guys that are older. Like, they have guys like Kevin Byard who have had some accomplishments and have been around for – Keenan Allen is a borderline Hall of Famer with possibly 3 to 4 more good years left in him, depending on how healthy he stays.
When the Bears come out of their bye, they're going to play the Commanders in D.C.
Love it. This is going to be great.
Jaden Daniels week and everything else.
But aren't you excited about that?
Caleb goes home. Yeah.
That's going to be a game.
But it's also the kind of game that, you know, if the Bears are legit, you know, they probably should go win that game. And if they're just kind of one of these teams that hangs out a little bit above 500, maybe they don't. And then they go to Arizona after that. Jason, you know, we're almost at the halfway point, after that. And then things get really dicey. What do you think would be success for them? Number one, by the way, would be enjoy your bye week. Nobody do anything stupid, right? That's success.
And get healthy. Yeah, we should circle back on Kyler Gordon here in a minute.
Yeah, Kyler Gordon. No, let's do it now. Kyler
Gordon. Just so people don't sit there nervously.
Yes.
Kyler Gordon was moving around pretty well in the locker room. He was not walking around in a boot. He was dressed in his fur coat and everything. He seemed very upbeat. Matt Eberflus said afterward they don't know exactly what it is, but he was hopeful that this was not going to be a big thing.
Do you know who was in a walking boot? Tyreek Stevenson, who hurt his calf on Sunday. The Bears wound up playing with three backup defensive backfield guys, given that Jaquan Brisker was home with a concussion. So, this extra week actually comes at a pretty good time for them. Back to success. If they split the next two, is that about right?
It's not even so much that to me. I know this is going to sound like a coach-type answer, but they have to play well.
How do they play?
I don't think I can put Washington quite the way you did where, say, like if they're good, they have to go win that. Mm-hmm. Washington's playing well. It's on the road. Right. I don't know that I would set the bar quite there. But you shouldn't go into Washington and score 6 points.
No.
That's for sure. I think when you do go out to Arizona, that's a team you have to show you can handle if you want to keep advancing up these levels of NFL teams. I think if they are playing well, then you kind of sit there and you don't know what they're going to be in the second half. If they go to Washington and score 6 points, then you're pretty pessimistic about the second half. If they keep stomping along like they are, if they go into all these places, you know, and put up, if they go to Washington and put up 30, for example, and win decisively, that raises the expectations. It's really a pivotal stretch coming up for them. I mean, 4-2 at this point, probably about where we thought they'd be. They beat a Rams team that going into the season you probably wouldn't have thought they would. They lost to a Colts team that going into the season and even going into the game you probably didn't think that they would lose to that Colts team. They're probably 4-2, right about where everybody thought they would be right now, and now it's hard to answer where I think they'll go from here.
I think for the first time, I can say with a straight face that if they played the way they played today, I think they can beat good teams. Like, I think a game like this, you know, gets you over the hump, you know, either in Washington or in Arizona or maybe even both.
They have New England at home after that, by the way.
Yeah. I mean, it could be another literal month, Jason, before, you know, we might still be having this talk a month from now. Not sure exactly where they stack up to the best teams in the league.
Commanders are 4-1 as we speak right now. I'm sure that they're playing Baltimore while we're recording this, so I don't know how that ends. But they're 4-1 with a quarterback who's playing really well. And then the Bears are at Arizona, home against New England. Home against Green Bay on November 17th is huge. November 17th starts a stretch of 11 days in which they play the other three teams in the NFC North. About a month from now, that kicks in.
Ending on Thanksgiving?
Yes.
Before we go, Jason, boy, the stadium was loud today.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's just a very unusual experience here. It's a wonderful one. You know, where we are, we're our press box is outdoors, so you kind of get to feel the crowd a little more than you would ordinarily. And I'll tell you this, you know, this crowd was a Bears home game, and it felt like a Bears home game.
I thought it was – I don't remember the last time I heard a stadium that loud, honestly. I mean, I might have to think back to 10 years ago covering college football and the SEC stadiums that were like this. This sounded like a jet engine. I don't know if it's the architecture of the place. It was definitely a heavy, heavy, heavy Bears crowd.
And it only holds – Tottenham Hotspur Stadium only holds 62,000 people?
60, 63, something around there, yeah.
I mean, that's not a giant – that. I mean, we see bigger crowds almost every week, but this one was very loud and very pro-Bears. Jason, what was your favorite British thing today? Was there any one thing that jumped out and grabbed you that was that you're going to remember?
Well, it had to be Rizzle Kicks doing the halftime show. I've waited all my life to see them perform.
Jason's being sarcastic.
I heard about them this morning. Okay. And then during their performance, I went to get food. So I don't know if it was good.
I stuck around to watch them. I did not get food. They were fine.
Are they Britain's outcast or?
It's a high bar.
Okay.
Yeah. I enjoyed God Save the King is pretty cool. God Save the King's pretty cool. But I really enjoyed the videos before the game that explained flag football to kids.
Okay.
And it was like, if the defense takes the ball away, that's either a turnover or an interception because they caught it in the air, or a fumble because they dropped it on the ground. It was a good 5-minute primer on here's how football works, and that's always fun.
On that note, one of the best things I saw this week, and I don't remember if I mentioned this on Thursday or if this had happened by Thursday when we recorded the last podcast, the Bears had Kyler Gordon and Romo Dunze interacting with a bunch of local kids who were part of some kind of play football initiative or camp or clinic or whatever. And I don't know when you listen to this, maybe you just care about what you see on the field and you don't care about what these guys are actually like or things like that, and that's fine. But a lot of people are interested in the personalities. You could not have picked two better guys to go talk to these kids. And you have kids. I have kids. I mean, like, when you have kids, you love to see adults who will give kids the attention and respect and not just push them aside or try to get this over with or whatever. Romo Dunze and Kyler Gordon entertained these kids for, like, 15 minutes each, and they were asking Romo Dunze to do a British accent, and he was doing it. They were asking Kyler Gordon about dance things and stuff like that and karate. And these guys, like, could not have been better to represent just their team and their country and everything. If that's these kids' first experience with somebody coming over from America, it's a really good look.
My favorite moment during that was when a kid asked Kyler Gordon to do his best gritty, and he got up and he did a gritty. It's great.
Yeah.
It's great. Jason, that'll do it from here. We got a bye week, so I think we'll go a little bit dark, try and rest up our injuries ourselves. But we will be back for Commanders Week the following week. Until then, you can follow Jason and Mark Potash and myself on social media. You can check us out at the Sun-Times website or on their app. And if you're in town, please pick up a newspaper. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.